to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds. Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is a weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related and reading-related topics. I started stressing the reading-related angle on this show a few weeks ago and actually recorded a Patreon episode on it because I think it's very important for writers to be interested in reading, not only because reading helps us become better writers, I think, but also because it helps us to support and appreciate other writers. I think we absolutely should be confident in our abilities as writers, and if we're not at that point yet, I think it's time we started working toward that, and I include myself in there because I still think my writing leaves a lot to be desired much of the time. But at the same time, I don't think it's good for us to be so confident in our abilities that we can't appreciate what other writers have done and the words they use. I'll be honest, if I find out a writer doesn't care for reading, I'm not going to be in such a rush to read something they've written. In fact, I'll probably try to avoid it at all costs. I want to know that a writer is knowledgeable about what's been written in a particular genre or area before they got to it, and maybe what hasn't been explored yet. And I also want to know that they're willing to learn from others so that they can improve, even if they've already written a number of books. Sure. Maybe there are a few writers out there who don't care for reading but have written great books, but I don't know. I just don't see how there can be that many. Because for me, reading and writing are so closely intertwined. So I do think it's appropriate to discuss literature, be it fiction or nonfiction, on a writing podcast. However, I just want to make one thing clear, and this was a point I made in my Patreon episode as well. You don't need to physically sit down with a book, whether it's on paper or on an e-reader, to read. If you don't have a lot of time to do that, or maybe you find it difficult due to ADHD or a learning difference, audiobooks are a great option too. I don't think there's any significant difference between reading with your eyes and doing it with your ears, and anyone who tells you differently is wrong. And even though audiobooks can be expensive, you can probably get access to a great selection through your local library. And if you don't belong to your local library, get a card now. It may sound like I'm ordering you to do it, and I totally am, but you'll be glad I did in the long run. Libraries are wonderful things, and we need them. So, as a result of everything I just said, back in season one, I started thinking about devoting episodes to particular writers and influential work that they've written. However, I've really only done one episode like that so far. That was my episode on Kurt Vonnegut's 1985 essay, How to Write with Style, this past January. So when I considered topics for this week's episode, I decided it's time to try it again. And this episode is inspired by nothing more than a quote I posted on Twitter earlier this week, but I really think it might be an interesting episode. I had originally posted this quote on my Facebook feed 2 years ago. That's how I remembered it. It came up on my Facebook memories. And it was from Shirley Jackson. It came from her book, Let Me Tell You, which is a posthumous collection of her previously unpublished stories, essays, and other writings. I think her children put it together. I had been reading this book 2 years ago, Let Me Tell You, and I really enjoyed most of the writings in it. I hadn't read much by Shirley Jackson up until then, aside from her 1948 short story, The Lottery, which I read in a number of classes in school, and which had a huge effect on me every time I read it, which makes me wonder why I never checked out anything else she wrote until I found that copy of Let Me Tell You. I also learned a lot about Shirley Jackson and how she thought about and approached writing while I was reading it. So in this episode, I'm going to talk a little about Jackson's style, particularly in relation to the lottery, which, according to ShirleyJackson.org, which I'm including a link to in the notes for this episode, quote, is possibly the most well-known short story of the 20th century, end quote. And as a result, I think it's a good place to start if you're not familiar with her work. If you're interested in what I'm about to say about her, I would definitely recommend you check out her other stuff, such as her novels The Haunting of Hill House, The Bird's Nest, and The Sundial, to name a few, as well as the aforementioned Let Me Tell You. So, the first thing we should probably acknowledge is that Shirley Jackson's works are primarily considered thrillers or horror fiction. You may hear a few of them referred to as quote-unquote gothic novels, but psychological horror also played a big role in her writing. Think back to The Lottery if you've read it, and by the way, I'm also including a link to it in case you want to read it, or maybe even if you have read it, you might like to follow along. It's only a few pages. The first time you read it, you may think, so this town holds a lottery every year because they think that'll lead to a good harvest. Nothing so weird about that. It seems like your typical small Midwestern town in the first half of the 20th century. But in subsequent readings, you're likely to see red flags that make the end seem less surprising than they may have the first time around. For example, the mood surrounding the event may seem more subdued, and I think the fear of the townspeople in anticipation of the results is more palpable in later readings, although we are going to go over that more later on in this episode. Also, when you think about it, it's quite disturbing to see what happens when someone wins this lottery. How quickly people they considered friends and even family members are willing to turn on them, as well as the fact that children are encouraged to celebrate in the same way that the adults are. I'm not going to go too much into why Jackson focused on themes that some of us are likely to find unsettling. Again, if you are interested in learning more, there's plenty of literature on this topic, and I think it's really fascinating. But I am going to focus now on some writing techniques that Jackson used that help make works like The Lottery so disconcerting. In an article titled, What Shirley Jackson's Haunting Writing Style Can Teach Us, Shannon Willoughby focuses first on Jackson's use of repetition, pointing out that repetition, even a line or two here and there, quote, can highlight significant plot points, add intrigue, and set the scene or mood, end quote. So when, in The Lottery, you see the name Dunbar repeated several times among members of the crowd toward the beginning of the drawing, you might be able to get a sense of the tension many of them were feeling. And when Old Man Warner refers to people in nearby towns that have given up lotteries as, quote, pack of crazy fools, end quote, and then shortly afterward, quote, pack of young fools, end quote, you might be able to feel how deeply entrenched this event is in the town's culture. And, as twisted as this may sound, you may even understand why these people continue to go along with this tradition year after year. But this isn't all repetition does. Willoughby also notes that repetition, quote, also compels the reader to sympathize with the main characters, end quote. And I think we definitely see that in The Lottery every time Tessie Hutchinson says, quote, it wasn't fair, end quote, or, quote, it isn't right, end quote. Of course, you can look at the fact that in past years, when other people won, so to speak, Tessie may have had no issues with fairness, and you may question or claim that her husband, who drew for the family, because usually the husband or the head of the household is the one who draws for this family, she claims that her husband wasn't given enough time, and you may think that's bullshit. But at the same time, her saying this numerous times kind of impresses upon the reader the barbarity of this event. Willoughby also emphasizes that Jackson was extremely effective at crafting introductions that draw readers in. I would argue that this is something that's important for writers in all genres. I mean, with so much out there for us to choose from and the busy lives many of us lead, a lot of readers won't be patient enough to continue reading something that doesn't hook them right away. But for the type of psychological horror that Jackson was a master of portraying, I also think it's necessary because it takes away some of the distance between a reader and a fictional work, and thereby makes the reader let their guard down and open themselves up to being scared a little easier. The first example of a quote-unquote killer introduction that Willoughby uses is from Jackson's 1962 novel, We Have Always Lived in the Castle. But I think the intro of The Lottery also has one. Jackson starts by talking about what a nice day it is. It's June 27th in particular. And even though she doesn't describe the flowers and grass in detail, from what Jackson does mention, you can get a pretty vivid picture of the scene almost immediately. She then mentions that there were 300 people in this town and says that, quote, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours, so it could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow the villagers to get home for noon dinner, end quote. Yeah, I guess people ate dinner at noon in 1948. I don't know. Anyway, an article by Catherine Sestana called Analysis of the Lottery by Shirley Jackson focuses on the details about the setting to describe another reason why Jackson's writing was so effective. A skillful use of contrast helps to build suspense, and there were plenty in the story. In other words, when you read an introduction describing a beautiful setting and glorious weather, you're probably not going to expect an ending that's cruel and violent like the one in the lottery, am I right? But Sestana includes additional examples, such as the fact that townspeople make small talk as they wait for the event to begin, and the fact that the same dude who conducts the lottery also conducts events like square dances and the town's Halloween program. And Sestana also points to Jackson's use of the word lottery itself, pointing out that it, quote, usually implies something good for the winner. Learning what the quote-unquote winner really gets is all the more horrifying because we have expected the opposite, end quote. So, I think that's a good message for any writer looking to build suspense. Ask yourself what the reader probably expects and do the opposite. I was talking a few minutes ago about how Jackson used repetition as one of the ways she hinted at the tension surrounding the event, and Sestana argues that, as the story unfolds, Jackson includes more and more hints that all is not well. For example, toward the beginning of the story, we see that the townspeople keep their distance from the black box that contains the slips of paper that the contestants draw. And when the man conducting the lottery asks for help, there's some hesitation before anyone volunteers. Sestana points out that these may raise red flags because, once again, this is a lottery and there's usually some degree of anticipation in a positive sense around most lotteries, but not in this case. However, again, the benefits of hindsight, if you didn't pick up on those details when you read the story, don't worry about it, because Sestana adds that, quote, they can be explained in a variety of ways. For instance, that people are very nervous because they want to win. Yet when Tessie Hutchinson cries, it wasn't fair, readers realize there has been an undercurrent of tension and violence in the story all along, end quote. One more point that I'd like to make in terms of Jackson's style, and I think this can be said for most of her writing, is that in a work like The Lottery, she manages to make the mundane fascinating. I think a lot of fiction writers are sometimes tempted, or maybe more often than sometimes, to have their stories take place in exotic locales and put a lot of action in there and intrigue. And although that can be done effectively, I've also seen instances of writers doing this to cover major plot holes. You don't see any of this in the lottery. It's just an annual event that takes place early in the day somewhere in Middle America, and most of the people in the town have probably known each other their whole lives. A lot of the women are housewives. Again, this was the 1940s. And even though Jackson had this huge imagination and talent for dreaming up bizarre circumstances, she was also a wife with several children and spent a good portion of her time doing housework and fitting writing in whenever she had the chance. In an article titled "The Novelist Disguised as a Housewife," Ruth Franklin explains that, quote, "Many writers, especially women writers, learn to derive imaginative energy from their constraints," end quote. I think Jackson is proof that you shouldn't give up your dreams of being a writer if you don't, say, have the luxury, because it is a luxury, of sitting down at your computer for 5 hours a day, pounding back a never-ending stream of coffee. You can visualize stories in your head while cooking dinner or taking your kids to school or vacuuming the carpet. These were the kind of things Jackson was doing all the time, according to Franklin's article. But also, I think this shows that if your lifestyle is more quote-unquote conventional than a writer is thought to have, you're probably in a good position to see more meaning in so-called ordinary tasks. So, even if you don't know any celebrities and haven't traveled to 100 countries, let alone one country outside of whatever country you're living in, that doesn't mean that you still don't have plenty to write about, because you probably do. I think Jackson was a good example of somebody who didn't take these tasks for granted. So anyway, let me know what you think. Email me at marissadelifarfalle@gmail.com. And follow me on Twitter, if you don't already, at @marissad13. And on Instagram at www.instagram.com/marissadf13. Also, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast at Apple Podcasts or whatever app you use to listen to this podcast, because that helps to get the show out to more listeners. Really, it does help a lot. And although I mentioned my Patreon page at the beginning of this podcast, I think this is a good time for me to mention that I'm not going to be doing that for too much longer. I just put one new episode up there, but it's going to be my last one. And I basically spend that episode talking about why it's my last Patreon episode. So I'm going to be pausing Patreon for the foreseeable future, but I am going to continue doing weekly episodes on the main feed for the foreseeable future as well. So it's just the Patreon that I am not going to continue at this time. I am working on setting up a page through Buy Me a Coffee, and I will let you know when that's operational in case you would like to make a donation through Buy Me a Coffee. So within the next few weeks, I am going to get that up and running, and I will let you all know when that's available. So until next time, thank you so much for listening and for all of your support. I truly appreciate all of it, and I really hope you like these episodes where I focus on a particular author. I am hoping to do more of them because I think it helps us learn a lot about techniques we can use in our own writing, and even ways we can incorporate writing into a busy lifestyle, as Shirley Jackson did. That's something I have talked about before, and I think it's important to address, because again, a lot of us don't have the ability to devote several hours a day to writing, and every once in a while, we may see a post on social media suggesting that we can't be serious about writing as a result of having limited time, and to that, I say bullshit, and you can quote me on that. So on that note, take care of yourselves, and peace out.
This podcast is written and produced by Marissa Delle Farfalle and brought to you by Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Learn more at www.anchor.fm.